And welcome once again to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. And before I go on, let me say that the opinions and views that you hear on this show are those of me and my guests and not those of the University of California Regents. Also, we're undergoing a bit of construction, so if you hear some noise in the background, it's not your radio, it's your radio station. So stay tuned. I don't think it should be too bothersome. First up is Amy Rennert. The Amy Rennert Agency specializes in books that matter. Amy has spent more than 20 years in the publishing business, pursuing her passion for the written word. The agency represents quality fiction and nonfiction writers, many of them award winners, and several agency books have been New York Times and national bestsellers. Amy Rennert, an award-winning magazine writer, is the former editor-in-chief of two national magazines, and her strong marketing and publicity skills have secured feature coverage for her authors in print, broadcast, and internet media. Her authors include National Book Award finalist Beth Keppert, who has been on this show, actually, for two of her books, singer-songwriter Jimmy Buffett, Today Show travel editor Peter Greenberg, and Terry Ryan, author of the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio, How My Mother Raised 10 Kids on 25 Words or Less. Two agency books have recently been named Edgar nominees in key categories. And I want to welcome Amy. Hi.
Hi, Barbara. So nice to be here with you.
Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Amazing that it has been about 5 years since you've been on the show. And I just find that mind-boggling, really.
I do, too.
Too much. The books you handle, they all seem to be of such quality. And I wonder if you could talk about that. So many of them seem to become commercial successes too, but that doesn't seem to be, when you look at the titles, they're right off the bat, they don't sound like commercial successes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we build many of them to become that, but I think for me as a literary agent, you know, I look first and foremost at the writing. I want to be wooed and won over by the writing and by quality, and with nonfiction, of course, I'm also very, very interested in books that can make a difference either in one person's life or in many lives. And so that, for me, that really is the starting point. You know, as a literary agent, the books that I represent, I know I'm going to be reading many, many times. And, you know, it's sometimes a very long process from, you know, the moment of conception or moment that I start working on a book until that book lands in the bookstore. And then, of course, we both know there's a lot of work to be done after that. So I really want to be sure that I'm passionate about those books and authors I do work with.
Now, I'm wondering if your reaction to either a book proposal that comes in the mail, a query letter that comes in the mail, or a query letter perhaps accompanied by a few pages of fiction, if you have different types of reactions depending on whether it's fiction or nonfiction. Or if you're looking for different things. I mean, is the writing, say, in fiction more important than the writing in nonfiction?
Let's start with that, because I think the writing in narrative nonfiction is equally important to me. If I'm doing a book by an expert, say a book I have that's just out now called Internal Bleeding, Surviving the Hospital, Your Doctor, and America's Epidemic of Medical Mistakes.
What a great title.
Thank you. On that one, the writing still is very important, but the message is equally important, whereas a book that I have coming out in June called Red House, which is the story of the oldest continuously lived-in house in all of New England, and in one family lived in the house for 300 years, eight generations of that family, that is narrative nonfiction and a memoir of sorts, and in that book, the writing was as important to me as it is in any novel.
Interesting. What about how authors approach you? Again, I would assume that there's a difference in a fiction writer approaching you through a query letter and a nonfiction.
Well, let me say first on that some agents really want to see a query letter first, whether it's for fiction or nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
At our agency, we are very happy to just receive the work itself. And in the case of nonfiction, that would mean a cover letter, which is essentially a query letter, but it's called a cover letter because it comes with a nonfiction proposal. And for fiction, we like to see a cover letter and the first 50 pages or so of the novel, ideally with a synopsis as well. So in that sense, it's very different because writers of nonfiction approach with proposals, although I have had novelists sometimes come with a proposal, too, and as well as the sample pages. One of the books that is nominated for the Edgar in Best Novel category is called Maisie Dobbs by Jacqueline Winspear, and it's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's mystery and historical fiction and a war story and a love story. And this one came in over the transom. The author had selected, 10 agents, I think, from Jeff Herman's book to send the work to, and I think very smartly sent not only the first pages of the novel, but a brief proposal, because that gave her an opportunity to talk about why the book was timely and what her special connection to the story was. And I think it served her well.
Interesting. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm talking with Amy Rennert of the Amy Rennert Literary Agency in San Francisco. Speaking of which, West Coast versus East Coast agents. What do you think? I mean, a lot of writers I run into and authors, especially very new ones, at first think, oh, I have to get a New York agent. And, of course, I have a West Coast agent, and I'm all for West Coast agents. I think, to me there's no great advantage to having a New York agent. But what do you say to that?
Well, and I do get asked that, particularly when there are writers who have several agents interested and some of the agents are in New York. I think the most important thing that a writer has to look at is whether or not an agent who expresses interest in his or her work is doing business with the kinds of publishers that the writer might be interested in. So, for instance, I'm in the West Coast, but I do books with Simon & Schuster, Random House, all of the many major publishers as well as small publishers, and I go back to New York a lot. I don't think an agent needs to be in New York, and sometimes I think, and I wonder if you agree here, that there can be real advantages to not having your agent in New York. For instance, I always remember that I work for the author. I represent the author. I am the author's advocate through the entire publishing process, and while I have very good relationships with editors and publishers, I never forget that it is the author who is my client.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think it's easier to do that when you're not in New York.
Yeah.
The other thing is, of course, I don't need to have 2 or 3 hour lunches every day. I prefer, even though I have to get up early and work the phones early, I prefer to be here. And yet I like going into New York several times a year.
So then probably one of the things to consider if you're choosing a West Coast agent is just really their connections, of course, and to make sure they get to New York.
That's exactly right.
Because,
and also I think for West Coast writers, if you're in a position where several editors are interested in your work, it's not even a bad idea for the writer and agent to make a trip to New York to meet with interested
mm-hmm.
editors and publishers. And of course, an advantage for a West Coast writer is if you have a West Coast agent, you're going to more likely get to spend time with that agent in person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I don't know. I would think that West Coast agents are treated just a little bit differently going into New York, that you're there and now they better see you because you're not there all the time.
Exactly. I mean, if some editors have told me that, I have lunch with them more than they have lunch with some, people who are in New York because they run into those people at parties all the time. And in fact, whenever I'm going to New York, my schedule fills up very, very fast because people do want to see me and see what books I'm bringing on this particular trip.
Yeah.
So I think it works out really well.
And as you said something earlier about, you work for the author, and I have to say, you're one agent that does really promote your authors. I'm always impressed when you email me about an author for the show.
That's right. Well, I'm hoping when we're done with this conversation, we can talk some more about some of the other authors I hope
yeah,
that you'll have on.
Yeah,
I stay very involved throughout the entire process, and, my former background as a magazine editor means that I have good connections in the media, but I also understand how important, radio programs like yours are for helping get the word out on good books and important books.
Well, where do most of your clients come from, or do they come from a range of places? I mean, are a lot of them referral? Do you get clients out of the slush pile?
Well, I mentioned Jacqueline Winspear earlier with Maisie Dobbs, and
yes.
That was one that we got out of the slush pile, and I have to tell you that nothing is more satisfying than discovering new talent in that unsolicited stack of manuscripts and proposals that come in every week. That said, I would say that there are two ways I primarily get clients. One is through referrals of other writers I represent or book publishers and editors, and the other is from reading a story that leads me to then get in touch with a writer. For instance, you know, I not only read, you know, the major publications like New Yorker and Harper's, but I read a lot of the regional magazines. So, for instance, I found that Red House story by reading Yankee Magazine out of New England.
Sure.
And, you know, San Francisco Magazine, Texas Monthly, all of those magazines have been great sources for me as well.
Interesting. What knocks you out in fiction? Is there something that comes in the door and you just go, oh, or is it, you know, the subject matter doesn't matter so much, it's just
I think it's the writing, although I'm an avid reader of mysteries and legal thrillers. So in those, I can be won over completely by character. Offer of Proof is a legal thriller I represent, another book that's up for an Edgar Best First novel. And the author is Robert Heilbrin, who's a public defender in New York City. And surprise, surprise, his protagonist is Arch Gold, also a public defender in New York City. And again, just like Maisie Dobbs, I was completely won over by character and good writing.
It's interesting, a New York author with a West Coast agent.
Yeah, I like that. That's good, isn't it?
What about nonfiction?
In nonfiction, you know, again, if it's narrative nonfiction or memoir, I'm, if the writing dazzles me, I'm likely to be interested. And I like quirky books too. I think you know, Deborah Ginsburg's another writer who's been on your show, who did a wonderful first memoir called Waiting, True Confessions of a Waitress, and has a new book out now about my sisters. And it's so wonderfully and sometimes painfully honest that, you know, those are the kinds of books that I go for as well.
I think when we were on last, getting back to fiction, I think you said you actually represent short story collections, authors of short story collections.
That's right, and I wish I could do more. In the fiction category, I do short story collections, and in the nonfiction category, I've even done some essay collections, which are not particularly easy to sell. Neither are short stories, although from time to time you'll hear about the short story author, you know, who gets a phenomenal advance. But I love the short story format, whether it's the true story or fiction. Andy Hockman, I represented her short story collection. And on the essay side, one of my favorite writers, Cindy Kaplan, has a book of essays called Why I'm Like This. Good title.
Good title.
Yeah, authors should always think about titles, by the way, before they approach agents and publishers. The title might change, and it might change many times, but, you know, in many ways, that's your first introduction to an agent. And if you have something that's catchy or resonates, it sets up the beginning, you know, a good first impression.
I often hear writers, especially, well, new writers, talk about titles and say, well, you know, it can always change later, right? I mean, I don't have to worry about it too much. And I always try to stress how they do have to worry about it too much before they send their stuff to an agent.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I think it's really imperative, incumbent upon writers to put their best foot forward, because you only have one opportunity to approach an agent. Now, there are many, many agents, but if you're going to your first 10 agents and these are your top 10 agents, why not go in with the very best title you have, the best cover letter or query letter, and certainly the best proposal or first 50 pages. You know, you can't send a novel in and say, I know it starts slow, but it really kicks in at about page 72, because you're not going to get an agent.
Sure.
And I think one of the biggest mistakes that authors make is sending in their work before it's ready.
And before it's ready, meaning they just haven't worked it over enough,
they haven't, you know, had a critical eye look at it, whether it's a writer's group, a writing teacher, a freelance editor, someone they trust who works at their local bookstore, or they haven't sat with it long enough themselves.
Again, you're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Amy Rennert today, and her agency is in San Francisco, the Amy Rennert Agency. I don't know if you saw that article in Salon the other day by Jane Doe, about...
I did see it, and I've since seen the letters.
Yes, the letters responding to that.
Well, you might want to tell people about the article.
Yeah, the article just sort of was such a rage against the publishing industry and the unfairness, the injustice of it all, and how, I mean, this author seemed to have sold a lot of books and made a lot of money writing books. And
I think there are a lot of authors who read that story or who could read that story and say, gee, I wish I had had those opportunities and that kind of support from agents and editors.
Yeah. What did you think? How did you react to it? And then the letters, of course, so many of them saying just what you said, you know, I wish I had made $250,000 over 8 years with my writing.
Yeah, you know, again, I guess first I want to say that I don't think anybody should become a writer for the fame and the money. It's too difficult a business, and if you're interested in, you know, making a lot of money, I wouldn't recommend that you say, oh, hey, I'll be an author. And, you know, for a lot of my writers, and this is true for me as an agent, I mean, I think, you know, if you can make an impact on someone's life, what better reward could there be for writing, you know, whether it's to entertain or inspire or give someone the feeling and belief that they can overcome some obstacle. To me, that's the greatest gift. I mean, I think there are some things in that article that I did agree with, and I think, you know, I mean, there's no question, and I certainly know this working in the business, and so do many people, that publishing is, you know, a bottom line business, more and more so with all the conglomerates that own publishing companies. But there was a lot that I didn't agree with, and I guess I felt that the author didn't appreciate enough all that she was given, and that there was a real sense of entitlement there.
Yeah. Same here. And I was thinking too. I know in the article she said she'd spent a lot of money on publicists, and I'm curious how you feel about that. Should writers put half their advance into an independent publicist, or do you wait and see what the publishing company is going to do for you?
That's a very good question. You know, one thing that I think has gotten more difficult in the short time I've been agenting is that, you know, books, particularly novels, I think, you know, have to hit big, just the way films do, you know, when they open in Hollywood, that a novel doesn't have time the way it did, say, when Margaret Atwood was first writing novels, to sort of slowly build, and she could slowly build an audience. And I think these days, you want, that novel's got to show some results right away, or it might be sent back to the bookstore. So I think that if someone can afford to bring in a freelance publicist, unless you get the feeling that the publishing house is really going to be doing a lot for the book, and, you know, generally speaking, if a publisher is getting, say, you know, under a $50,000 advance at a major house, I think it's unlikely to assume that the publisher is going to invest, you know, a lot of money in the promotion and marketing of that book. That if you can afford to bring in a freelance publicist, and the good news about publicists, unlike agents, is you have an opportunity to really interview a publicist and find out a lot about them before you make an investment, that it might make sense, and certainly I have recommended to some authors that they do bring in a publicist to work with me and work with the publisher, and I think it's important everybody work in tandem. You don't want the publicist, the agent, and the publisher all approaching the same sources for media attention, but if writers do bring in publicists, I think it's also important to do it at least 3 months before the book is being published, not right as the book is being published, because then it's too late.
Do you feel the same with nonfiction in terms of bringing in a publicist, or is there a longer period of time that nonfiction has to sort of gear up? And
I believe that nonfiction, maybe not so much memoir, but other kinds of nonfiction, certainly expert-driven nonfiction, that there is more time than there is for novels. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's something to talk about, and I think every writer should discuss with their agent, as well as with their editor and their publicist, the possibility. You know, the problem is, though, that one can hire a publicist and spend good money, and there are no guaranteed results.
Yeah.
So you're really hiring publicists who have good relationships and can guarantee that at least the book will get in front of the right people.
What about platform? This is a word that authors...
Not my favorite word.
Yeah, authors hate this word.
Yeah, authors want the book to give them the platform.
Yes. is this something you have to consider when you're, say, looking at a nonfiction author?
It's something I know that the publisher is going to have to consider. So one of the things I do is if I'm interested in a book, I will work with the author. And, you know, I might decide to work with an author based on seeing a proposal, but still spend 3 months working on that proposal before we send it out, and would probably be doing things to build up that reputation and platform if it doesn't exist already. Obviously, with internal bleeding, when I'm dealing with two top doctors at UCSF who have already written many papers on this subject and for professional journals, they've already got the expertise. But in other, you know, and I also represent Peter Greenberg, you know, Today Show travel editor. So, I mean, you can't ask for a better platform than that. But when I'm doing, say, a business book or a health-related book with someone who's not necessarily as nationally well-known, we try and build up as much of a platform as possible to show that with just a little bit happening, this person could cross over the tipping point, if you will.
Yeah. Amy, do you have any last words? We are amazingly at the end of our time. Any advice for the authors or would-be authors listening?
Well, I think there are three things I think it takes for good writers to break through, and that's talent, patience, and persistence, and to always remember, you know, why it is you're writing, because then the dark days or the rejections won't stick.
Yeah. Yeah, the dark days. All writers have them.
All writers have them. All agents have them, too.
Oh. Okay, you're in San Francisco. You're in the books.
And, yeah. Actually, I'm in Tiburon, just north of San Francisco.
Thank you so much for being here.
Barbara, thank you.
You're welcome. That was Amy Rennert with the Amy Rennert Literary Agency in Northern California. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Kim Dower in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama, ache and tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
On 88.9 FM KUCI, we're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. And let me once again say that the opinions and views that you hear on this show are those of me and my guest and not those of the University of California Regents. And also, as I said in the first half, we're undergoing a bit of construction here so that if you hear noise, it's studio noise and not radio noise. I was with Amy Rennert in the first half, and I am back with Kim Dower. She has worked in book publishing for more than 20 years as a writer, publicist, and media coach. Her companies, Kim from L.A. and Perfect Pitch Productions, have advised more than 1,000 high-profile authors and celebrities and have created national marketing and publicity campaigns for a wide range of best-selling literary and commercial fiction and nonfiction. And her most recent book is Life is a Series of Presentations, 8 Ways to Punch Up Your People Skills at Work, at Home, Anytime, Anywhere. And she is a co-author on that book. And it's a wonderful book, and I'm so happy to have her here. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm good. Good to talk with you
good.
On the air.
Thank you.
Tell me about this book, Life is a Series of Presentations. How did this come about?
Well, it came about, it's actually a great publishing story. You were just talking to a wonderful agent, and every year agents and publishers and booksellers all congregate at the big book expo, you know,
yes.
the big convention where people talk about their books, they sell their books. And I was there with my partner at Perfect Pitch Productions, which is our media coaching company, and we were hoping to get business from other publishers to coach their authors. And we had a big fishbowl, and you put your card in it, and we did a drawing at the end of the convention. And I pulled out a card that said, Mr. Presentation, Tony Geary, from Dallas, Texas. And he's a guy who coaches top CEOs, America's top CEOs. So I said to my partner, you know, I'm putting this card right back. Because basically he does what we do only for corporate people, and I figured really there was nothing there for us. But my partner, who's very honest, said, no, 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 we have to call him, but he'll never come to Los Angeles. And he came to Los Angeles. And what happened was kind of miraculous, because for one thing, I learned that something very important from Tony, which is people who are really good at what they do want to always know more about it. So he went all the way, you know, from Dallas to Los Angeles to learn how we work with our authors and our writers to see if it could help him with his CEOs. And we were working together all day, and the one thing that really resonated that we thought was so interesting was that what he teaches to his corporate people and what we teach our authors are skills and techniques that they use in their regular everyday lives. Because in fact, as I said to Tony, life is a series of presentations. And he...
Good title.
It was a good title. It hit exactly. It came out of a conversation. And he went back to Dallas. And about 6 months later, he called me and he said, you know, Kim, I use life as a series of presentations everywhere. It's on my business cards now. It's in all my material. We should really write a book. And that is the story. And the book is really about, it's for everyone, for all of us every day, no matter what we do.
Well, I was going to say, so much here is so applicable to writers.
Yes.
Because, yeah, especially, you know, all writers these days, it seems we're required to be presentable and speak well and be able to carry ourselves in public.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's not fair, Barbara. It's just not fair because it's hard enough to write the book. But now you can't only be a writer, not if you really want to get the word out there. So you spend 3 years, 5 years, 10 years sometimes by yourself in a room writing, researching, working on your material, and then when the book comes out, you think your job is done, but your new job is just beginning. And most times you're not prepared for that new job, which is actually being the promoter and having to get out there and sell it and talk about it and take 5 years of work and distill it into one or two sound bites, which is very unnerving.
Yeah, it sure is. I hear authors all the time say, I thought my job was to write the book.
Right. That's right. And, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
So this is something, this is part of why we do so much business at Perfect Pitch, because we have a lot of writers who come to us and say, help me. And it's not only helping them to come up with three or four things to say about their book, but also getting them sort of in the mood to go out and do it, because it's not easy to have to be so cheerful all the time, you know. You know, you go on these book tours and it's 3 weeks, you have to be nice to everybody, you have to be upbeat, you know, you talk to six or seven different shows a day and you think you're repeating yourself, and it's very difficult.
Now, how does Perfect Pitch intersect with Kim from LA, with the PR that you do for authors? Is the Perfect Pitch more a workshop, and the other is more you're a publicist, a freelance publicist for an author?
Yeah, they're two totally different companies that came together out of the need of Kim from LA. Kim from LA it's my publicity company, and I do publicity for authors, and I've had that company for almost 20 years. But somewhere along the line, I realized that my authors were not ready to do these shows that I was booking them on. they would go off and they would do it, whether it was the Today Show or a local radio show, and they would inevitably get off the show and say, I don't know what I said, I don't know how I sounded, the time just went by, and there's all this anxiety. And so I thought, you know what, these people could really stand to be coached. And I hooked up with a wonderful actor and a director and someone who really understands what it's like to be in front of and behind a camera. And we put together Perfect Pitch, which is a company that teaches authors how to do these interviews. So they're separate. Authors hire me just to do publicity, and some hire Perfect Pitch to do media training. They're two separate entities.
Hmm.
But they really complement one another.
Yeah. Interesting. I want to talk about your businesses and talk about publicity for authors. But first, I'm so curious about co-authoring.
Yes.
You were a co-author on Life as a Series of Presentations. What was that like for you?
Well, that was, you know, that was an experience. I mean, not only was I a co-author, but yet there's a third person involved named Joel Fishman, who really put this book together for us, because this is one of those books that... it was based on an idea and based on the work of two very different, very separate people, and very different work, in fact. So Tony and I started out together trying to put this together, and I wrote a lot of the kinds of things that I do, how I work with my clients. He would tell me stories about how he works with his clients, but it was really a big jumble. And our agent said to us, you know, we really want to bring in a writer to pull this material together, because there was so much going on here. It was it took a village, Barbara, in this case, to write this book. That's all I can tell you. So Joel was fabulous, and we would talk to him, spend hours telling him what we do, how we work with our clients, and the real meat of what was going on. And then sometimes he would tape it, sometimes he would just take notes, and sometimes he would go off and write. And then it was a constant process of reading the material, saying, no, 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 that's not exactly what I meant. This is more what we do. And I was mainly responsible for telling the personal stories, because we've peppered the book with real-life stories, you know, like Sandy came into my office distraught because she couldn't get a job, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do with Sandy, and we wanted the book to be very reader-friendly. We don't want it to be a business book. So I would tell my stories of the people who come in here, of course, changing their names, and what their challenges were, whatever. And then Tony would do the more nuts and bolts, procedural kinds of things, you know, what to do in front of 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came together.
Mm. Now, public speaking and presenting is supposed to be... what, the second most fearsome?
The scariest,
thing.
Number one.
The number one thing.
Number one. We'd rather be dead, Barbara. That's the truth. That's it. No, number one fear is public speaking.
Huh.
And, you know, it's interesting because we've had a reason why, and we put it in the book, and everybody, you know, people talk about the reason being fear of the unknown. And you just don't know what's going to happen to you when you're up there. And we talk a lot in the book about taking the unknowns and making them knowns.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a talk at Beverly Hills High School last week, which was really an interesting experience, to the teachers about presenting. Of course, they could teach me about presenting because that's what they do all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But someone, I think it was Alice, who heads up the English department there, she was telling us that she read this amazing book about different fears people have, and this is it's the oldest fear, and it's because, and I've never heard this before, in the animal kingdom, if one little animal is alone with thousands of other little animal eyes staring at it, it knows it's going to be eaten.
Huh. That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And so standing in front of people, you're natural. That's why we sweat and our hearts pound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the adrenaline from the oldest. You know, I don't know if this is true, but I just love that image. So you
yeah.
think of like a little bunny standing up there in front of all these wolves. But
sure.
It is the number one fear.
Hmm.
So
yeah, okay.
We spend a lot of time helping people, you know, get over that.
Hmm. You are listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I'm with Kim Dower today, and she's co-author on Life is a Series of Presentations, 8 Ways to Punch Up Your People Skills at Work, at Home, Anytime, Anywhere. And it's, I believe it's a fireside book. So you also have Kim from L.A., the business Kim from L.A., which is a doing publicity for authors.
Yeah.
Now, typically, is it the authors that bring you in, or do publishing companies bring you in?
I would say it's about 50-50.
Uh-huh.
You know, over the years, I've been on retainer for various companies. For years, I did all the West Coast publicity for Hyperion, and now I do all the West Coast publicity for Warner Books. And so it's a very wide variety. And then I've got, you know, authors who call me and hire me on their own, because publicity companies just don't offer as much as they used to for various reasons. It's much more difficult to get your own publisher to do everything you need.
That's so true. Has it just gotten worse, or has it always been this way?
Well, you know, we don't want to use the word worse, although...
Oh, go ahead.
Although it hasn't gotten better. But I think there are real, you know, reasons for it. In the old days, like 10, 15 years ago, not everyone went on an author tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain books were chosen, certain titles were chosen, and the big lead titles were the ones that went on a tour. So maybe you had 5 or 10 in a season, and you have a large publicity department. You know, there's enough to go around. There people can do it. But these days, everyone goes, or everyone wants to go on a book tour. There's a lot of reasons for that, too, but you get more bang for your buck. You know, when you think about it, a full-page ad in the New York Times book review is $20,000, $25,000.
Yeah.
And for $10,000, you can hit 5 cities, you know, and you can do radio and TV. So everyone wants to be on TV. Everyone wants to go on a book tour.
Are tours more applicable, say, to novelists than nonfiction writers, though?
No, not the other way around? Quite the opposite.
Huh.
You know, when you think about it, fiction, I mean, you do a lot of fiction. You are one of the few radio hosts who will even talk to fiction writers. That's why we love you so much, Barbara. You know, there aren't a lot of venues for novelists. People want self-help, they want information, they want to know how to do something, and, you know, you're going to get on a lot more shows if you have the new cure for whatever, the South Beach diet, for example.
Right.
It's information you can give out. It's difficult to talk about a novel. And so novelists have a very hard time. I wish there were more opportunities for them.
That's interesting, because to me it would seem like a much more interesting night, personally speaking, because, you know, even though the book I have coming out is nonfiction, still, I look at novelists and I think, well, I'd rather, you know, have a novelist at a book, hear a novelist at a bookstore than hear me reading from my book, you know?
Well, now you're talking about something else. I think that at a bookstore, that's a whole different story, because at a bookstore, I mean, if you do follow someone's writing, and if you are a fiction lover, the idea of seeing this writer in a bookstore, live, in person, read from their work, is a thrill. I mean, that's the greatest thing about the book tour for fiction, is that you can actually see your favorite writers or be introduced to authors at a store, read from their work, and then meet them and have them sign a book. Because as we tell our clients in Perfect Pitch, people like, they want to think they know the person who wrote the book. And if you can connect, if an author can connect with his or her audience and make the listeners feel like they know you, they're going to go buy your book.
Yeah.
And so the idea of being in a bookstore and making that connection, that's very powerful. And we'd much rather, I mean, who cares about meeting the guy who wrote the South Beach? Not that I have anything against him. You know, but it's not going to be a thrill. You want the information.
Sure.
You want to lose the weight, frankly, but you don't necessarily have to shake his hand.
Yes.
But a fiction writer, you know, that's celebrity stuff.
Mm. So then are there certain things you can do in terms of publicity that are more likely to sell books? Or does it just depend on the author, on the project, on just everything? I mean, like you said, an ad in the New York Times Book Review is going to run thousands of dollars, whereas a book tour will run much less. Will that ad sell a ton of books, whereas more books than, say, the book tour?
You know, Barbara, I wish I knew the answer to that. After all these years and doing it over and over and over, I still really don't know what works. That's the sad thing. We know what doesn't work. What doesn't work is doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that for sure. Even though you take a book, even though this is an old example, but you take a book like The Bridges of Madison County.
I just wrote that title down 2 seconds ago. I was going to ask you.
Nothing was done for that book.
Sure.
I mean, literally, that book came out. They did a first printing of 5,000 copies. And to your audience who may not know the book business, that is nothing. I mean, 5,000 copies is nothing. You can't even get that across the country. So they did, that was the original printing, I believe. What happened with that book was a phenomenon that has since tried to be repeated, which is what's simply called word of mouth. And they did do what they call a gossip galley mailing, which was take the book before it was a book, but in galley form, we call it, and they sent it out all over the place to different big mouths in the business, you know, people like me who are going to read the book and talk to everybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the book, someone in the business, I got galleys from a friend of mine, and she said to me, Kim, this is a true story. This really happened. It's amazing. So there was sort of this lie attached to it also, you know, that they were like spreading these crazy stories. And I read the book thinking it was a true story, and then I told everyone about it. But what happened was word of mouth. Everyone said, oh my gosh, you've got to read this book. So the word spread, and the 5,000 printing was sold out immediately.
Yeah.
Now, word of mouth can happen, but ultimately, of course, we know he went on Oprah and he did everything else. But we know that if you don't do anything, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But you can do everything, and it still won't work. The truth is, people want what they want. When we want something, we go get it. And if we're not interested, nothing's really going to make us interested.
Hmm.
Even being on Oprah, you know, and everyone's, can you get me on Oprah? Well, you know, there's books that she's had and guests that she's had that don't really make that much of a difference. We also know that if you're going to be on that show, you know, the publisher gets ready to print another, you know, 30,000 copies. But even that sometimes doesn't work.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, it brings up another point, which is I've heard agents say that they're appalled, but it's true that certain publishers want to take on authors that are telegenic, so that they can go on TV.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yes, it is true. It is true. And what's also true is no one's going to publish a terrible novel because the author is lovely. You know? I mean, when you get right down to it, fiction is fiction. It's got to speak for itself. But in the self-help genre, or if you've got X number of exercise books or diet books, or even Life is a Series of Presentations, which is a really good book, but one of the attractive things about Life is a Series of Presentations is the fact that Tony Jiri is out there, and he's speaking to corporate America, and he's got built-in clients, the fact that I'm out there, and mm-hmm. I'm talking to people. I mean, yes, we're totally equipped to write this book, and we were the right people to write it. But part of why Simon & Schuster bought it is because of who we are, and we know how to present.
Sure.
I mean, the thing that many people forget, authors, we all forget this, is that publishing is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making a business deal. And, you know, even, you know, when Amy probably might get 10 wonderful manuscripts, but if she has to choose one out of those 10, she's going to find out which one of those people is most presentable also. Mm-hmm. That's all part of the package.
Interesting. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and we have a few minutes left with Kim Dower, co-author of Life is a Series of Presentations, published by Fireside. Do you find as a publicist that certain authors are easier to promote than others? Is it one of those just depends things again? You know, it's just, you know, it makes no sense. It just...
Oh, no, it makes total sense.
Yeah?
And you know from the first conversation if it's going to be easy or not. And I think that there are some people, you know, we talk about in Life as a Series, the likability quotient, you know. People like to work with people who they like. and who are likable. And we like to work with cheerful, cheerful, happy people. But, you know, there are some authors that are easier to promote because they make it easier themselves. They're easier to work with. They get you the information you need. We need to know everything about you and what you've done and who you've spoken to and is there anyone in the media you know. We need to get all that information from our clients to make our jobs easier. And then are you willing to learn? Are you willing to understand what it takes? The one thing I always say, and I've said for years, is there's a big difference between a great book and a great guest. And I think that's what we're talking about, or you mentioned before about the tape, that people need to look at tapes. You can write an amazing book, and you cannot know how to open your mouth on TV or radio.
Sure.
And that's a real problem. If you want a publicist, and you want that publicist to get you spots on these shows, you have to be able to rise to the occasion, and your book cannot speak for itself. That's the problem. We can only push so much. Now, we can do it with reviews. We can, you know, you don't have to talk to the person to get a book review. And as a publicist, I can try to do everything I can to get a reviewer to look at a book. But if the client wants to go on radio or TV, they have to really work it. They have to be prepared. They have to understand what it takes. They have to be willing to be criticized about their performance. And there are people who are definitely easier to work with than others, and people who are much more open to learning than others.
When do authors contact you in terms of, say, doing publicity for them? Do they contact you way before the book comes out? Do they first find out what the publishing company is going to do for them? And,
well,
or is it, you know, all up in the air until the book comes out?
Well, when they do and when they should are two different stories. You know, they do like we all do. We wait till the last desperate moment. I get a lot of people who contact me when the book is already out and they're disappointed because the publisher hasn't done enough or they're suddenly realizing more can be done. That is impossible for me. I get a lot of people who contact me a month before the book is going to come out, which is difficult. But what you were saying is what they should do, which is 6 months before that book comes out. Everyone has a pub date, so we know. You know, now, for example, a book is going to come out in September, let's say a fall book, this is when they should be contacting me. And first they talk to their publisher, as you mentioned, and they say, hey, you know, what do you guys think you're going to be doing? Because you're partners with your publisher. So you want to get an idea, is there a budget? Are you going to be doing publicity? Or do you think it's wise for me to hire my own person?
Mm-hmm.
You have to sort of get the lay of the land and understand what you can depend on, and then you make the phone call. And the work begins about 3 to 4 months before the book is on the bookshelf.
And then the first couple of months the book is out? Or can it just continue depending on the budget?
I think depending on if the book has legs, as we say. The 3 month lead time is really to lock in the bookstores, because bookstores are very hard to get these days. There's a lot of competition to get in the bookstores. So you want to get those bookstore dates. You know, right now in March, for example, I'm booking June tours, bookstores, not necessarily the media, but certainly the stores. And then a month before you do the media, and then, yes, 2 months is a good amount of time to really get it going. And if a book takes off, you may want to keep working with a publicist. And basically that's how it goes.
Oh, my. How can people find you?
Well, Kim from LA at earthlink.net.
Okay. And you can always email me, and I'll give you that email address and get you in touch with Kim as well. Any last words for authors listening?
For authors listening?
Yeah, for authors listening.
Well, you know, there are the authors who are being published and the authors who are waiting to be published. The ones who are waiting to be published, the same thing everyone says, you know, to all of them and us, just keep working on it and you'll get published. The ones who have books coming out, the best advice I can give is know as much as you can about the publishing process. Don't think that when you hand in your manuscript, your work is over with. Because you don't want to be disappointed. This is your moment. This is your chance. Work with your publisher, not against them. They're your team. They're your partners. Find out what they're doing, And the greatest advice I ever heard was Carolyn C. once spoke at a class that I was doing on book publicity, and I learned more from her than anyone. But she said, the minute you get a book contract, the minute you sign with someone, open a bank account and put a little bit of money every month as if it were a baby, and then when that book is born, you'll have some money in there that you can spend on your own publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what it's all about.
Yeah, interesting.
So.
Oh, I wish we had more time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming on. And best of luck with this book.
Thank you so much, Barbara. And I want to hear about your book, too.
Okay.
All right?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
That was Kim Dower, co-author of Life is a Series of Presentations, 8 Ways to Punch Up Your People Skills at Work, at Home, Anytime, Anywhere, published by Fireside. And you can reach her at Kim from LA, all one word, at earthlink.net. We're done again, and so much still to do, but I'll be back next week with more wonderful guests, and I want to leave you with a quote by John Steinbeck, who said, "I have never smuggled anything in my life. Why then do I feel an uneasy sense of guilt on approaching a customs barrier?" I'd say because he's a writer. Thank you for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Until next time.